Hey, homeless?
I'm going to say he came in just right after I did. And I met him right here in this room at a speaker meeting tonight, via one of the speaker meetings that we had. And he's been an inspiration to me. He is definitely my brother, and I'm excited to listen to him. Let's have a round for Greg.
I'm Greg, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Greg!
Okay, I'm kind of nervous tonight, so bear with me here. How's everybody, all right?
Yeah.
Saturday night?
Groovy.
All right, so where do we start? When I was a kid in the 60s, in the 70s, early 70s, drinking was very much a part of our family. Every adult that I can remember, anything that we did, anywhere that we went, always had a beer in their hand. Now, they're certainly not the reason why I'm an alcoholic, but as a young kid, myself and my cousins, and it's amazing how many of us kind of went the path of the alcoholic, it's what we saw, and it was a big example. And I think what we did see is that in order to have any fun or to be able to do anything, you needed to have a beer or a drink in your hand. And it was made very clear. I had a decent childhood. We went camping a lot in the Sierra, did those kind of things. We'd go into Mexico and stuff like that. Anyway, we had a lot of fun. Mom and Dad and the rest of them were always drunk, so, you know, us kids got away with a lot, you know. And there was a lot of fun in it. There was also a lot of weird shit going on because, you know, alcoholics, when we're not drunk, right, we got to face life. And so we had to kind of trudge through all that, too, as kids, and try to understand and make heads or tails of it. So anyways, kind of going forward a little bit, when I was 13, we were living in Bishop, California, and I remember a buddy of mine busted out a baggie one day, and he had some weed on him. And we're all sitting there, me and my buddies, you know, and we're like, oh, man, you know, we're not supposed to be doing that, you know, that's illegal. Just give it a try. Well, we've all heard that before. And I'll tell you what, after doing that, I found it, man. You know, I found nirvana right there. I mean, I felt like I'd never felt in my life. I felt like every imaginable worry that I had, I just felt better, you know. And it was just amazing, the feeling. And the chase began, you know, at 13. And all those years before that, through school and everything like that, you know, I was always this tall, kind of gangly kid, you know. I was never really great in sports, you know. I tried. It was never really my thing, you know. And I was always a jokester, too. Like, if you crashed your bike going down a hill, I was the kid on his back cracking up, you know. And that just was me, you know. And I don't know. I just remember being that kid. And that first day I got stoned, drugs are part of my story. The first day I got stoned, wow, I found nirvana. And I chased it and chased it and chased it. And it was kind of hard up in Bishop because it's kind of a small town. It's, if any of you know Sierras. And so alcohol was a part of the story then. You know, we would go to the keggers down by the river and stuff like that when we were in high school. We would do things like that. In freshman year, we all stole some hard liquor out of the back of a liquor store and went down by the creek and drank it. And I remember going home at like 11 o'clock and my mom was answering the door and I'm just puke all, you know. We were freaking freshmen, you know, drinking hard liquor, you know. And she didn't say anything to my dad, you know, thank God. But it's amazing how, as kids, when we're doing that and we're lost in the drug use and in the drinking and stuff, we find other kids that are doing the same thing, that feel the exact same way that we do. And then we embark on this journey, you know. So we moved down here in 1979. My parents remained here. I had moved away. But we moved down here, and I finished my last 2 years of high school over at Rigetti. And I identified with the stoner crowd. I didn't like to go to class. It wasn't my thing. Even though now I'm I had a teacher in my ceramics teacher, Mr. Plante, busted me and another guy in the back where the kilns were with some weed back there. We were showing each other some buds and stuff, and he came in and snatched it out of my hand and called the sheriff in. They did the whole deal, but flushing it down the toilet and everything like that. And of course, somehow I'm friends with this guy on Facebook 35 years later. Yeah, karma's amazing. So, you know, I mean, he was always like my favorite teacher. And he was ceramics, and I did good in ceramics. I really made some killer bones. You know? Math and everything else. Didn't have time for it. I had a tendency in school to get behind, you know, and the more I got behind, the more I'd go to Waller Park and get high. I just didn't care, you know. I didn't get the establishment. I didn't get school. I hated school. I hated being there. I just wanted to be with my friends playing Frisbee or doing something like that or going to the beach or something like that. That's all I wanted to do. And of course, the family life, oh, my dad and I, you know, he wanted to kill me, you know, and my brother. And of course, I got to be 17, and I signed up in the Navy. Man, get me out of here, right? Off I go. 18 comes around. I didn't even finish high school. I took the GED and said, later. So it's funny how the addict or the alcoholic in us, we make these geographics, and it doesn't leave us. It just follows through us, and we take it with us to redefine it in another direction. So I go to boot camp, and I did pretty well there. Of course, if you don't do well there, it gets kind of, Jim knows, it's not a very pleasant experience if you're not towing the proverbial line. And so I did well, you know. I've always been a guy that's been able to fly under the radar, man. You know, I've always done enough and done my best to stay out of trouble, kind of stay one step ahead, so to speak, and maybe that's been kind of my downfall. Maybe the reason things did get so bad is I was an escape artist, you know? And I mean, I look back on that now, and that's exactly what it was, you know? We went overseas, you know, you go into a place like Thailand, where you're just, all you got to do, we're out in Pattaya Beach and anchored, and all you got to do is just lower a fishing line down, and there's guys in these little boats down there tying off matchbooks with Thai stick in them. We're bringing them up because we're on duty, and, you know, half the people on board the USS Flint smoke weed. It was just the way it was, you know. And that was kind of the whole story overseas, and like I said, Navy was just taking the party to another part of the world, and it was fun, man. It was fun. We had some good times. Don't get me wrong. When you're 18 or 19 and they're like, here's some money, we'll see you in 3 days. You know, that's good stuff, man. But that kind of behavior, you know, I had the same attitude in the Navy that I did in school, you know. I just didn't want to do what the man was telling me to do, you know. And they could kiss my ass, you know. And you know, and that's not the best attitude to have, you know, but that was the attitude I had. So I kind of went through there, mediocre. And I actually had a comment made to me at Captain's Mast, if you guys know what that is. It's like Navy court. And the captain looked at me one time, and he said, you know, you need to put Velcro on your uniforms because you make rank faster than anybody I've ever seen, and you lose it faster than anybody ever seen. He says, we give you a stripe a week later. We're taking it away. Yeah. You know, and I just was like, you know, screw you, pal. And God dang, man. I look back in that, and a lot of that stuff I've kind of put out of my mind, but, you know, I look back in that stuff, and it is what it is, but, you know, we partied hard in there, and when we came back to the States, you know, it followed us here, too. They sent me back to go to some weapons handling school in Illinois, and you know, I found the same crowd back there, right? Partiers, because they only sent me back there, which I don't know why they were doing that. We found each other, like I said, we always do, you know, and the party started there. You know, and that's really where the drinking started to pick up, because the drug use kind of had a minimal, like when I was back in the States, it was a little different, you know. They were kind of up in the ante in the Navy, and we were peeing in the bottle a lot. Or maybe it was just me. I don't know. But, you know, we were going out every night, man. And we were, you know, it was amazing how we would go out and we'd party till the bar shut down. We'd come back. And you'd sleep until 6, because you had to be, you know, in ranks by 7. And you would just drag your ass all day long. And by 3 o'clock, I mean, you'd just be sitting there telling yourself, God, I can't wait to get to my rack and get some sleep. But when 3 o'clock bell rang, party's on, we were young. We were resilient, and this is what we did every day. And we partied, but there was no tomorrow. I mean, in the blackouts and everything else. I've told this story. I know Suzanne's heard this before. I've told this story before, and you know, this happened to me, and I still didn't think I had a problem. I thought you had a problem. You know, we had gone into, we were in Kankakee, and we went out to the bars. And we were doing these shots where they put you in a barber chair or something like that. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. And I got so hammered, well, we all did. And it was about 10 below outside, and I don't know what happened, but I woke up the next morning on somebody's couch, and I remember opening the eye, one eye, and the eyeballs looking around the room, and I smell bacon and eggs, and I see these kids sitting at a table with their parents, and I don't know who these people are. And I mean, my God, man, I was mortified, and I'm just laying there going, oh, fuck, this can't be happening, you know, and it ends up that, that night before, I guess, it was so cold, I just went and knocked on somebody's door. And they knew I was a serviceman, so they took me in and, you know, let me go to sleep on their couch. And I'm sitting there eating breakfast, because they said, hey, you want some breakfast? I'm like, sure. And these kids are just looking at me, and this little girl's looking at me like, you're such a fucking loser. You know? And I'm just kind of looking back at her and going, you're absolutely right. And her little brother, he just thought it was hilarious. He just thought, dude, you're in so much trouble. But that was to define so much of the stuff that I did, you know. And I re-upped for some reason. Because they gave me some money to re-up. So I re-enlisted, only to fail another drug test. So they unre-enlisted me. Sent me packing, and that was all right, because I hated it anyways. So I came back here, got into some trades and whatnot, and, you know, I found my old friends. They were still here. It was amazing how many of them were doing stuff like working at a 7-Eleven. They'd gone nowhere, you know. And I'd been all over the world, so I thought I was pretty worldly. You know, I was the shit, right? Making $5.50 an hour over at Donberg Tile or whatever back then. So, yeah, good stuff, you know. So, I did that for a couple years up here, and I had to get out of here. I got to the point where, you know, cocaine became a part of the story, and I had some friends that are in these rooms now. You know, her and I were roommates at one point, and knew each other really well, and a couple other friends, and that whole cocaine thing, man, that had the potential to take me over. And like I said earlier, I had a good job of flying underneath the radar, so I was like, I gotta go. I gotta get away from the cocaine, you know. This is not good, you know. Sitting up until 5 in the morning going through a couple 8-balls is not a good recipe, you know. Or playing Risk or whatever. So off I went. And I went back down south, and I thought, you know what, I'm gonna get away from that and get away from the drugs and everything like that. And that lasted for about, you know, a whole 4 days. And I found the same people down there. It's amazing how we just gravitate, you know. I could go down there and not know anybody, and within 48 hours, somehow, some dude will pop out of the bush going, hey, man. And it's like, oh, there you are. And it is amazing how that shit happens, you know. So I ended up getting married, to a person, I don't know why I married, but we had a daughter. And that ended in divorce after a couple of years. And I got clean right after that. And I stayed clean for about 3 years. And I never worked a program. I didn't do anything. I was kind of cold turkey. I went to some meetings, whatnot. I had the sponsor. He was a clown, which is why I never called him back, because I knew more. Or I should say I've forgotten more than you guys have ever known at that point. You know, I knew everything there was about sobriety because I'd stayed clean for a whole week. And so I didn't need to. I would go to your meetings once a week, you know, just figured that's what I needed to do because I knew anything about staying sober. And it was NA meetings at that time. And so, of course, I finally relapsed. And there was some moderate drinking that went on from like 1994 to 1999. I thought I had kind of beaten alcoholism and drug addiction. I was just in jobs that I couldn't smoke weed. And the drinking, somehow I'd kind of curbed it. But, you know, this disease is cunning and baffling, man. You know, it'll make us think that we got licked. It'll lure us in a little bit at a time, and you know, it'll show us that, oh, see, you got control over this. You can do this on the down low and everything like that. But the problem is without alcohol, we still have the alcoholic thinking, you know, and we still have the isms and all that stuff that goes along with it that I had. Now I can admit, probably worse than most. And it wasn't until I got married the second time that the real hardcore alcoholic came out in me, started drinking like single malt scotch. I went and got my contractor's license, and I started kind of doing things in life, you know, and I was doing all this shit drunk. I built a business drunk. I don't know how I did that. Even to this day, I'm pretty amazed. But I did some really, really cool projects, a lot of remodels and a lot of stonework, a lot of custom shower, shit like that. And I was drunk. I was stoned all the time, and I was doing this really cool stuff, somehow making payrolls and stuff. Not responsibly. It was all by the skin of my ass I was doing this stuff. But somehow I was doing it, and I was able to, we would go on these big elaborate fishing trips with my buddies, you know, and we went to Scotland and England and Ireland. We drove it all by car, you know, smoking pot the whole way, on the Scotch Trail, kids in tow, you know, this whole stuff. And I look back on that now, and I'm amazed at how much of that stuff was selfish thinking, you know. I was so self-centered, it wasn't even funny, because everything that we did was about me. It wasn't about you, it wasn't about the family, it was all about me and how it affected me. And I was like this big child. I was just on this big party in life, you know. And I didn't care about the wreckage that I was leaving behind. I didn't care about you. I didn't care about family. And I had no idea of the damage that I was doing in the wake of my destructive behaviors. I do today, you know, and I'll go into that in a little bit, but I just kind of kept on this, path, you know, and this path that just had so much destruction. Eventually, the business, I had to close the business. The economy went bad in 08, which was legitimate. You know, we had always stayed really busy. We were at sometimes we were booked out 6 months, 8 months, a year at one point, you know. But when the economy went bad, it was like somebody turned off the proverbial financial faucet, you know. And everybody, all of us that were licensed contractors, not all of us, but a lot of us, you know, we just moved on, you know. It wasn't really worth it. And we weren't established enough to really maintain. And so a buddy of mine who was a construction manager, we actually went and got our CDLs and started driving a truck, and that was a mistake. But it was good because it got me... I had to go, you know, pay my dues, so I did this long-haul thing for a couple of years. And I'll tell you, it, in a way, God will do for us what we cannot do for ourselves. And kind of went and started doing this, and a couple years of it, and, you know, it takes that before you can get other positions, local and stuff. But you don't have a chance to really drink. You're not, you know, they piss testing you all the time. And so you're kind of forced into somewhat of a level of sobriety. So I did all this without working any kind of a program. It was just, you know, we would still drink, but you don't have much of a chance, you know, like I said. And that was in 08. I did that to 2010. Started doing something else with an ATT. A buddy of mine brought me and another friend in and started smoking pot again, knowing fully well that we were getting piss tested all the time, and that if we failed one, that would go away. It didn't matter. It was still, you know, a lot of us, like, speak for myself, we were still doing it. And that's the disease for me. It's just this reckless behavior, this path, where I didn't care, you know. It's not until I got up here, which is about, I'm in my fifth year up here right now, we lost the contract with AT&T, so I had to claim unemployment for the first time in my life back then, and which was very, very odd, but I had to really kind of do a gut check, and I found this position up here, and it was decent money. And so my dad had a health scare, and it was amazing how this all happened. I got a position up here, and I had swore I would never come back to Santa Maria. I just didn't like it up here. Once again, God will do for me what I cannot do for myself. And so I came back up here, took the position, and kind of got involved in a local church up in Pismo, and I thought I was doing this, but I was still getting drunk on the weekends, not during the week. I wasn't in the smoking pot anymore and doing that kind of stuff. But I still felt like shit, man. I still had this ball of stress right inside here, and I couldn't get rid of that. Nothing I did, it just was still there, you know. And I just couldn't identify it, you know. And it was just this, the anger, resentment, discontentment. Still very judgmental, very bitter about the past. It was everybody else's fault. I was blaming everybody else. And then I would go into church, and I would be an usher, and I would go to the Bible studies, and you know something? It was a fraud. It was just this one big fraud. I was doing something that I thought that's who I was supposed to be, you know? And I would go in there, and I'd be sitting there going, you people are, I would think to myself, you people are so full of shit. You're in here doing this and doing that and doing this, and then you're out doing this to each other and whatnot, and I hated that. I hated that about the church. And I'm not knocking your church if you go, but personally, I couldn't stand that. Not because of what you did, but because of how it made me feel. And I finally went to go see a shrink because my dad and I were at odds, and a lot of that old stuff was coming back up, and the stuff I just told you about, the irritability and all this different stuff was still in there. It was palpable. And I remember going to see this guy, and he says, you might be an alcoholic. And I'm like, you're full of shit, man. And he goes, no, really, you might be an alcoholic. And he said, I'm an alcoholic. And I said, well, good for you. And I said, that doesn't mean I'm an alcoholic. You know? And he says, well, there's a difference. He says, you don't have to have a drink in your hand to be an alcoholic. And I'm thinking, I looked right at him, and I said, they gave you a degree? You know? And he just laughed. And I thought, I just insulted this guy, and he's laughing at me. Ends up, the guy, I think he saved my life. Because he told me that, like I said, you don't have to have a drink in your hand to be an alcoholic. Everything that you've described to me is alcoholic thinking. It's an alcoholic way of life. It's been running your life forever. You've been running the show. You've been living on self-will. And I wasn't ready to hear that yet. I went and saw him a couple more times. And once again, you know, I know more than everybody else. So I told him, you know, I said, hey, we'll go have breakfast or sometime, you know, or something like that. That was the last time I ever saw him. The feelings did not go away, though, you know, and I was becoming more just pissed off being in church, just hated it. And I was angry at God, you know, and then I started to realize I didn't even know who God was. I knew who your God was. I knew who the God was that you were shoving down my throat, you know. I knew that God since I was a kid, you know. Let's go to church, and when we're done with church, you know, the whole family, we're going to go out and drink a couple cases of beer. Yeah, he's a great God, you know. And so I came to a meeting, and in here, I remember seeing Jim and stuff, and I brought with me all of my anger, my resentment, And I sat right where Dana's sitting, and I just sat there, and I just sneered at everybody, and I thought, God, I so didn't want to be here, but I so wanted to be here. I just didn't want to feel what I was feeling inside, man, and I didn't know how to get out of that. I didn't know what to do. I was so tired of being tired, and I was just so tired of feeling the way that I felt that I was willing to try anything, you know. And that's really kind of where it started. I went to a couple meetings at the 1600 Club, and then I went to a, what is it, the yearly thing we do,
the Roundup.
And I got a sponsor, and we identified with a lot of the stuff that was going on, and started going through the steps. I didn't work the steps real fast. I was pretty stubborn in that, too. It's taken me, I've just finished them, and it's going on pretty soon. It'll be 2 years. And life today is okay. Life today is okay. I worked through the steps, and I fought it every step of the way. Not in the sense that I would say I wouldn't do it. I just, it was very hard for me to put pen to paper. It was very hard for me to go back and feel that stuff again. And it's been very hard for me to go back and look at the lives that I've damaged. It's been really, really hard. And my sobriety so far, my eyes have been open to a lot of the stuff that I've done. And probably the biggest lesson that I've learned so far in sobriety is that I have to have acceptance in my life. And I have to know that there is a plan for me, and it's not my plan. And since I've been in here, to touch on the subject of God a little bit, I have, in a sense, I've kind of been reintroduced to Him. It started by reading a book called The Shack. No, it's not AA-approved literature, but I don't care, because it's an awesome book. And it showed me that I can, when we talk about a higher power of our understanding, what it did is it showed me that I can have God in my life, and I can have a God of my understanding. It also showed me that you can have a God of your understanding, and then I can accept you for that. And I can still love you for who you are, you know? And these are the principles that you've taught me in this program. This is the person that you guys are showing me how to be. Because I didn't know. When I got here, I was a wreck, man. I didn't know. I had no idea who I was. And so this whole time so far of sobriety, of actually working a program, has kind of introduced me to who Greg is. And so these little things are pretty big aha moments for me, you know. But to understand this God in my life and who He is in my life was a huge revelation to me. You know, I can pray to Him in the mornings, and I'm learning how to pray. I'm learning that the God of my understanding is a very forgiving Father. He's a good dude, man. He's not this guy that's going to kick our ass every time we do something wrong. You know, and that's huge for me, and that's who He has to be, and that's who I would imagine that He would be. And it was that book that taught me that, you know, that we have to get outside of the frame of thinking to accept that who He is in our life. And the way I look at it is, if somebody comes in here and they worship a twig, and that gets them sober, the God of my understanding, I don't think, has an ego that is so big that's going to have a problem with that. I mean, I think it's a miracle that person stayed sober for 24 hours. And why would God have a problem with that? You know? And I'm okay with that. I'm at peace with that. So many other principles that I've learned in here, like my family, you know, they have imperfections. I just perceive and I see them differently today. It used to be we would all fight a lot, you know, because everybody, with the exception of my mom, who's not an alcoholic, she's just pretty screwed up. in other ways, living with a bunch of them all these years, you know, the ones that are still out there, they're not healing in any way. So I have to accept the fact that they're probably thinking the way that I once did, or have the ability to if I go back to that. And so now I can kind of, I can accept them on those terms, you know, and I can understand where they're at and why they're there, and I can be okay with that. And so what I'm saying is I can love them on a level that I can love them today, and it doesn't have to be anything complicated, you know. And that's something that you guys taught me. You taught me to be of service, to put other people first. So I try to do that. I secretary a meeting. I have my meetings that I make every week, at least three of them. I know it's not a lot, but I do work a lot of hours. I work in Santa Barbara 4 12s a week, and then I go and I Uber on the weekends, do the booze cruise, drive the drunks around. So I'm a busy guy, you know, and that's just what I do, man. That's my thing, you know. But the gifts of the program, you know, God's got me right where he wants me, you know. It's like, I don't have the big house again, you know. We sold that a long time ago. I live in a little apartment right now. But you know what? I'm okay, you know. I'm all right, you know. I took back up playing guitar, so I'm kind of lost in that hobby again. And it's good for my head, you know. It's a good place to be, you know. Really good for me, my head. And it's a good place to spend money. I'm going to take my mom to Scotland next year. You know, that's something that the program is giving back to me. And I'm going to need a lot of prayers to do that. This is putting other people first, you know, in my life. And what my hope is to continue with the program, is to continue serving, to be of service to others, to continue to do God's will, not my own. You know, and to be an instrument of his faith as much as I can. To continue to use the principles that you guys have taught me, not only when I interact with you or people in the outside world, but at work. You know, at work we got to deal with some pretty difficult people. Guess what? I was a pretty difficult person too. You know, so I'm learning how to keep my mouth shut. Just go and do my job, and I do a good job, you know. I do a good job. I've got probably one of the best routes. I mean, I got Santa Barbara route. That's not bad, you know. So I mean, life is pretty good today, you know. I don't have that big ball of stress right inside here anymore. It's gone. But I know one thing, that if I pick up a drink, it's right around the corner, man. You know, all that discontentment, all that crazy thinking, all that shit is, it's just waiting right there, you know. It's waiting for me to come back to it, and it's going to continue to try to lure me back in probably for the rest of my life. But with the tools that you guys have given me in here, I can keep it, or we can keep it at bay. So that's really all I got. Sorry I can't go longer, but that's it. Thanks for letting me speak tonight.
Oh, that's all right, man. This is awesome. Let's give it up for Greg again. That's it. Awesome. Now I will turn the meeting back over to Tom.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you very much. What a great job. All of you, great job.